is up, everybody? Welcome to yet another episode of Father Dynasty. I'm your fatherly host, Chu, here in the manhole, here to talk a little fatherhood and a little dynasty fantasy football. And he looks familiar. I think he's been here not even a week ago. And that was pre-draft talk. We're talking post-draft stuff now, the chaos that has ensued since. And I think you know him as my best bud, my commissioner, and in his own house, he's known as Emma's dad. Tyler, how are you doing, buddy?
It's a great introduction. I'm doing well. Obviously, the general public doesn't know this, but we've been texting pretty much nonstop since this NFL draft got both underway and completed. So been looking forward to coming on and breaking things down, sort of getting through some of the noise and figuring out some actionable takes and maybe some hot takes, and just excited to talk about it.
Absolutely. And I don't think it is hyperbolic at all to say this is probably one of the crazier drafts in recent memory. Going into it, I know that they talked about the talent, generational talent, not really being there at any one position, at least for the fantasy relevant positions, and more specifically the quarterback. And I know that certainly seemed to be true in terms of how the NFL evaluated these talent, these players, because one quarterback owned in the first round, my personal favorite, Sam Howell, wait until the fifth round. All the receivers that were going off the board, a couple that either people can't pronounce their names or don't know who they are. But needless to say, it was chaotic. But before we get into the draft-specific talk, I want to do a roast me or toast me, and I'm actually going to go ahead and put one of your trades center stage. It's a very exciting position for me to be in, as I always trade too much. So it's nice to be on the other end of this here. But I'll recap it here. So you, as of today, actually got CeeDee Lamb in a 2023 first and sent away Brandon Cooks, the 2022 101, the 2022 108, and a 2023 first. So go ahead, and what was your kind of your thought process in terms of what you were doing there?
Yeah, so I'm sure we'll get into some of the actual finer points of my broader point later on in the podcast, but overall, I did not like a lot of the landing spots for the skill position players. You already touched on that it was fairly well known, and I think for the most part, most people would agree that this draft in general didn't have that elite top-end talent. And so the next portion of that is, well, you know, guys can end up in really good situations, and they're still pro football players at the end of the day. We're going to get some good guys out of this class, but don't get me wrong. But I guess as the owner of the 101 and the 108, I just was not excited about anybody that I was going to be drafting at either of those spots. That could end up being a totally cold take, and whoever Brooks takes in one or both of those spots, you know, may end up being super, super awesome. And I'm okay with that. CeeDee Lamb is somebody that basically to get, I guess, back before I go into with a fine tooth comb, CeeDee Lamb is obviously, in my opinion, easily top 15, maybe top 10 wide receiver. He's tied to his current quarterback for several more years. And the gentleman that I traded with, in my humble opinion, does not forecast well for next season. So I wanted to punt back to having a first rounder next year. So I believe in my team either being in the playoff conversation, in the playoffs somewhere. So I believe my first round pick will be at the back end. So it's essentially a 2023 swap to where I'm hoping to get into the front end of the draft, looking ahead to guys like CJ Stroud Bryce Young from Alabama, or a couple stud quarterbacks. There's a couple others that could slingshot up boards. So wanted to get myself into that mix while also gaining some value off of this year's picks and just passing the buck and responsibility of figuring out which one of these guys is going to hit to somebody else.
Yeah. And I would argue just in terms of looking at the trade and saying, all right, who, what's the best piece just to start there, and then kind of break down like, all right, well, if it's the best piece on one side and there's enough value on the opposite side, is it actually worthwhile for both sides? And I mean, I think in his position, I would say it makes sense. Although, I mean, getting CeeDee Lamb, like you were saying, top 10, I mean, some could argue even top five, considering the stability of, ironically enough, not everyone is like a Brandon Cooks, to where if you're going to a different team, having a different quarterback, having a different system, you can continue to produce 1,000-yard seasons over and over and over again. So the fact that CeeDee Lamb, I guess, at least for the near future, he does appear to be tied to Dak, tied to a very good offense that I know they bolstered that offensive line again in the draft. I think he's set for a while. Amari Cooper's out of the picture. Gallup's there, but, I mean, he's still recovering. Cedric Wilson's out of the picture. And getting that 2023 first, so, and I correct in saying, so that was his first, and you sent your 2023 first to him, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so you end up getting CeeDee Lamb, by far and away the best player in this draft, or in this trade, excuse me. And then 2023, which is understood to be at least a better, like, higher tier talent draft, you get a better pick in 2023. So, I mean, arguably, you get the better situation now and in the future. But I understand that probably Brooks wanted to diversify and get a couple of picks this year. Cooks is a good wide receiver, but a little bit older. And he, you know, moves around next year in the draft. I mean, I'm sure if it's a 5 or 6 pick difference next year, it's not going to kill him, obviously. But if he, yeah, hits on one or two of those picks in the 2022 draft, we'll see. But, I mean, I would say you smoked him on this one, if I'm being completely honest with you. But it's one of those where it's fair, but you clearly won it. And it could be, like, for now and in the future. Like, the only way that you lose this one is if there's, like, those bizarre injury things or stuff that no one could have foreseen. But, I mean, you're definitely in a good spot.
I think that the way, like you said, I'm more likely to win this trade, I think, at least – at the very least in the short term, and then potentially the long term. The only way that I see myself losing this is if he hits lightning in a bottle with one or both of these picks. Brandon Cooks has a good first year and Brooks makes the playoffs next year. And then I'm still okay. I still have a first round pick, but obviously the core of this deal was around me trying to parlay both of my first rounders this year into moving up into a better first rounder next year. So
yeah,
that would be the scenario in which I lose it. I will say kudos to Brooks for chipping me down a little bit, because the initial trade that I sent him, I think he would have woken up like next Monday morning and looked at the big board and really started to dive into it and realized that I would have gotten a little too much off of him. So we negotiated a bit, and I think it ended up being mutually beneficial, because, like you said, he needs bodies. He doesn't have a lot of depth, and he gets two shots at this year's first round without losing a first rounder next year. He just traded some back. So I think mutually beneficial, just obviously, I think, a little bit more so for myself.
Oh, yeah. And just to clarify, I am indeed toasting you on that one. So toast to a great trade.
Feels good. First roast me or toast me about me, and I get toasted. And now that I, as discussed in a prior episode, I actually know what the core of that segment's supposed to mean. So,
yeah, after you shared that confusion, I was like, yeah, that's actually a fair point. I probably should have done a poll or something to be like, does everyone understand what I'm doing here? Because after you said that, I was like, I don't think anyone's going to know who won or lost in any of the ones that I've done. But that's a very good point.
I think I'm just an idiot. I think most people understand that better than I did.
I don't know. But that's one trade, and I guess we can slink over into talking about some trades that were in the first round of the NFL draft. And those were some big ones. I know one I think you were not too excited about, which was the A.J. Brown trade. And then now, one that, as of news today, looks a little bit different, the Hollywood Brown going to the Cardinals. So what did you think about, again, what I thought was a fairly chaotic – the first round was the more chaotic than the rest of the draft, but overall just a very different draft than what I think what we're used to.
I was really, first of all, it was very entertaining. The first several picks, Jacob Ridgeway was over, we were watching it. And for the most part, really the top 8 to top 10, I think, was a little bit boring. You know, it wasn't a lot of skill position type players, a lot of defensive guys. And listen, we're football fans, but it's so much driven by fantasy football. So we want to see, you know, skill guys go in the top 10. And we got Drake London, and but I wish that I had available a prop to me to bet on trades, because I was seeing somewhere around 6, 6.5 in the first round, and I felt pretty good that there was going to be some shifting at the back end, and that did end up coming to fruition. You touched on the two big ones, and we rarely see, I feel like most of the time, we see draft picks only being exchanged. Maybe every so often we'll get we'll get a player sprinkled in there. Ironically enough, this is a random pull, but the one of the last like big trades I can remember, and I'm sure that I'm forgetting some, but I remember when the Eagles were building that quote unquote super team that Vince Young got in trouble for calling it that. And I believe they traded in the first round something involving Kiko Alonso and the Dolphins. And he might have been with the Bills. I'm getting the teams wrong, but anyhow, we don't usually see these blockbuster trades, including players on draft night. I'll start with the Hollywood Brown one, and I'll save the Titans one for after. The main thing I thought of about Hollywood Brown to the Cardinals is they must be doing something to try to appease Kyler Murray, because they're buddies from college, and it's very clear that it's been at minimum a tumultuous offseason for them. You know, he had the weird thing with him deleting all his social media stuff pertaining to the Cardinals, and you know, this is the first year that he can renegotiate his deal, so it looks like he might be trying to do something like that. But selfishly for myself, I really liked that trade because I am the proud owner of both Kyler Murray, who gets another target, somebody he's familiar with, has some chemistry with, but I'm also the proud owner of one Rashad Bateman in Baltimore, who the Ravens must feel pretty good about if they're willing to trade away Hollywood Brown. I'm a little concerned that there might not be a lot of other areas to take attention off him. It seems like it's pretty much him and Mark Andrews. But and then obviously I've texted you, gave you a take for the article on your website. Not a big fan of what the Titans did with AJ Brown. Allegedly it was somewhere discrepancy of maybe somewhere around $8 to $12 million over the course of 4 years. And Titans general manager John Robinson just wasn't willing to pay that, I guess. So we'll see. I'm very hesitant to get too excited about Treylon Burks because more often than not, like, and this is coming from someone you know on this podcast several times, I was a big Treylon Burks fan coming into this draft. I think actually when you traded me the 101, I sent you back a picture of Treylon Burks that I was going to take him. So it feels a little bit hypocritical for me to be so unexcited about him, but I think it's also just the opportunity cost that it took to get him walking away from a wide receiver like AJ Brown. I did not like.
Yeah. I felt like you were saying, I mean, Treylon's one where I know at least like throughout last season, he was like the sexy pick where it was like, all right, before we consider landing spot and scheme and how he would fit, he's just an incredibly exciting player to watch, how he played against Alabama. Like it was kind of, it's like, okay, we're not going to look for the negatives yet. He's a big uber athletic guy who just can seemingly, you know, do anything. He didn't play for a great team necessarily, but obviously had plenty of highlight plays. But yeah, once it got down to the nitty gritty of like, all right, certainly once we got landing spot, and I know, like you were saying, viewing AJ Brown, like much like the guy that you received, CeeDee Lamb in the trade we were talking about. I mean, both AJ Brown and CeeDee Lamb are very good players. I would argue both are top 10 wide receivers. And if you look at it that way, it's like, all right, well, if we know we have a top 10 guy here, do we think we can get another one? Or like, how much worse is he allowed to be where this is worthwhile to not have paid AJ Brown another couple million dollars, which I don't have $1 million to spare. So I understand that it's no small potatoes, but to be able to guarantee or have a better chance at success, having a healthy, well-paid AJ Brown alongside of Bobby Trees, a healthy Derrick Henry, you got Tannehill, you have Malik Willis now, which to see, you know, next year or two, if he's going to step in with Tannehill's contract, like you mentioned last time on the podcast. So yeah, I'm curious to see what the Titans are going to look like, how they're going to do. For the Eagles offense, obviously AJ Brown going to the play with Jalen Hurts. I'm a Quez Watkins fan. I like obscure players that don't really do shit. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, having two, I would say not alpha, but two very, very, very good receivers in AJ Brown. And I'm blanking on him too. Who's
Devonta
Philly?
Smith.
Yeah. Devonta Smith. Yeah. So having those two guys and then having just a little bit of depth, not Jalen Reagor. But I think both offenses can do well. And I think it's going to be a tall task for Treylon Burks, but I would like to think that he could be a good producer, just probably not what AJ Brown obviously would do on a given season.
Real quick before we move on to the next, I wonder, with the benefit of hindsight, we'll probably never know this, but if I was a reporter covering the Titans beat, I would absolutely ask John Robinson and or Mike Vrabel this question: is if they knew that Malik Willis was going to fall as far as he did, would they have just paid AJ Brown? Because like we touched on in the previous podcast, I mean, they save $18 million walking away from Ryan Tannehill next year. I think the plan was always to get some sort of quarterback out of this draft. And if you're saving $18 million, that more than covers the gap that it sounds like is out there that would have been able to pay A.J. Brown what he felt like he deserved. What I think I agree he deserves, because I know he deserves it because he turned right around and got 24, I mean, not 24 a year, because only part of that contract's guaranteed, but he got 4 years, 100 mil with the
Eagles. It doesn't lie. Yeah. That's the funny thing. It's like, I was going to say, I was like, I mean, everybody can be caught overpaid, but I was like, if someone decided to pay it, they did not write that check lightly. That was a very well thought out decision to say, this could be a game changer for our team. And they went and did it. So respect to Philly on that one. So diving into the draft itself, I know the first of each position, what would you say is the biggest surprise, whether it be the player themselves or maybe how soon or late they were picked? So we got Pickett, first quarterback, at the 20th pick going to Pittsburgh. Got Breece Hall at 36 going to the Jets. Got Drake London going 8 to the Falcons. And then Trey McBride going 55 to the Cardinals.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this one, I tried to come up with some other scenarios other than the obvious, but I think it was too obvious not to say Kenny Pickett. I know that I don't remember what the odds were. Like, I know London was kind of a dog to go first, but that top end of the wide receiver class was a little bit muddled. Like, it wasn't a super big gap. Trey McBride is the Mackey Award winner, number one tight end in the country, at least from a college football award standpoint. So that one didn't surprise me too much. Breece Hall didn't surprise me too much, but I had heard all offseason that Mike Tomlin loved Malik Willis, and that if he fell past 10, there were rumors they were going to trade up and go get him. And not only did they not do that, but they took a completely different quarterback available to him at 20. So, you know, I'm not personally a Kenny Pickett guy. I watched him struggle, maybe not the best word, but really didn't see him shine for 3 years in the ACC. You know, they're in the same division as our alma mater. So I watched Pitt play football at least once a year. And, you know, I can tell everybody else with confidence, I definitely watch them more than once a year because I typically keep up with the ACC pretty well. And, you know, he's a gamer and he's got that moxie, all those buzzwords that you want to hear when I laughably say to cover up for talent discrepancy. Like, those are the types of things that people say when people kind of suck. It's like, oh, he's got moxie. It's like, oh, well, that means he's probably like inaccurate, but he's a real go-getter or something. Yeah. So, and I wanted to, I don't know how familiar you are with the particular play, but the fake slide in the ACC championship game. I wanted to know, I actually asked this to Jacob the other night when he was over for the draft, and I don't know if he actually ever gave me a straight answer because we just started talking about other things. But how much was that fake slide probably worth for Kenny Pickett's draft prospect? Because you cannot see a highlight reel clip of that guy without that fake slide. And yeah, it was a sweet play, but you can't ever do it again. It's illegal in college football. They made a rule immediately. And I just, that's my long-winded way of saying I just wish him the best, but I think the Steelers might have screwed the pooch.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, on the fake slide, when I saw it happen, I was kind of just like, come on, man. Because, I mean, I know the defender was just like, after he ran past him, he was just like, you've got to be kidding me. It's like, for all the times you tell me I can't light someone up, and then he just did that. Like, even, I don't even think he feels vindicated after they changed the rule after. He was like, but yeah, I didn't get to light him up the one time where he fake slid, and then I didn't just get to clear him out right there. Because, I mean, he probably would have felt great if he did that. But yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, it's smart that obviously it was not a rule at the time that you couldn't fake slide. But that had to have been something in his back pocket thinking, I'm mobile enough, but if I ever run into a situation where I need to fake slide, I'm going to at least do it once because it probably will be disallowed after that. Like, he had to have known at some point he could have done that. Like, if he on the fly thought, I'm going to fake slide so he doesn't hit me, that's a ballsy move to think he's not going to get lit up. So I had to think he was like, I'm going to do this real quick. But yeah. I mean, I think that intelligence and awareness can only get you so far. Certainly when you make it to the NFL, I think you get exposed by much more athletic, much more intelligent, much more aware. much more invested in terms of just, I mean, that's their job at that point. They're not going to school. They're just living and breathing football. So that, the coaches, the coordinators, I don't think he can get away with anything on that sort of level of just kind of just the simple deception and kind of working around the rules. So I do wish him well. Obviously, he's a hometown kid, so it's cool for him to be able to be playing at Pitt and then going to the Steelers. But, yeah, I definitely agree. I think that was a surprise, and it speaks highly of it that how far the other quarterbacks fell. Like you said, that it was rumored that Willis was going to go there. Obviously, he did not. But so in terms of maybe some of the players that, I guess I'll use the quote that I put in here, who do you see as a player that has now slipped like a demon's whisper into the top five that maybe you didn't have? And this is based on Superflex rankings. So someone maybe because of draft capital or landing spot, they were outside your top 10, sorry, and now they've slipped into your top 10.
I was going to say, I needed to clarify top 10 because the guy that I'm going to mention is, I think, borderline worthy of top 10, but he's definitely not worthy of top five.
Yeah,
this is probably a stretch, but for me, I wrote down David Bell going to the Cleveland Browns. Okay. I think that's a player that he's got a history of playing inside and outside. He's a versatile player. The Cleveland has a ton of targets up for grabs. And the thing that works to these rookies' benefits is that nobody has, or at least to his benefit in particular, is no one has an established history with Deshaun Watson. Now, we know he's going to throw the ball to Amari Cooper. I mean, they went out and they paid Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper's a tremendous talent. He's a great player. So that's Alpha One. But after that, I know they have DPJ, but Jarvis Landry's gone. They have David Njoku. He's still we're waiting for that tipping point potentially with him. Has all the potential in the world. But there's really a lot of targets that need to get divvied up. And I think there's probably going to be less passing to the running back. We've seen historically that mobile quarterbacks just don't check down as much. They'd rather run it themselves. So maybe less targets go to Kareem Hunt. You know, they don't throw the ball to Nick Chubb really in general all that much.
Yeah.
So I wrote down David Bell from Purdue. He's a great player, somebody who didn't test particularly well, but you don't have to be all that fast to beat NFL linebackers and safeties, you know, if you're coming out of the slot. So somebody like him that has done that in college and can also play on the outside. I'm fans of those guys because they find different ways to get onto the field quick. And that's what you need in fantasy football opportunity.
It trumps all. And that was, I did not expect you to say that. I don't know who I thought you were going to pick there, but that's a sneaky pick only because, yeah, that is a good opportunity. And to think, yeah, was it Anthony Schwartz?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, DPJ and Anthony Schwartz, I think, are the next guys.
Because yeah.
Higgins is gone because I thought went to the Panthers, but maybe then he got released from them. But yeah, it was hilarious to think of with Deshaun Watson going to the Browns. It's like, all right, we'll get Amari Cooper. Yeah, but OBJ is gone. Like, Jarvis Landry's gone. I'm shocked that how they didn't address much of anything really in the draft that I can think of in terms of weapons for him. They could obviously still add some veterans at this point, but I don't know if it's a money issue. It shouldn't be that I'm trying to think of, but my guy here that I think I might mention a little bit later here too is Damian Pierce. Again, I know that we've spoken about him in the mock draft that you and I and Jake are doing, but a guy where a lot of people I'd seen penciled him in at the RB 3 or 4. It was kind of an interesting thing because coming out of Florida, it didn't seem like he got much opportunity, but when you put on the tape, he has a lot of kind of good, hardworking plays and not necessarily a burner and a breakaway guy, but a guy that seems to do it all and have A+ effort every single play, most specifically in pass protection and that sort of thing. So when you have a big bruising guy like that, I think you don't have the worries of a Ronald Jones saying he's a pretty good runner, but he can't block for shit. So Bruce Arians is just going to berate him off of the field. So if you have a guy like Damian Pierce going to Houston, I think they are kind of stabilizing that offense to a degree. So I'm a huge Davis Mills fan. I know they added, I think it was John Metchie as wide receiver. So Damian Pierce, I'm thinking, I mean, Rex Burkhead, the ghost of David Johnson. I don't think he's going to have much of an issue getting on the field. So I'm very excited to see that. But which I guess I gave away showed my hand here. Which day two running back do you feel like had the best and the worst landing spot?
Day two, I think the best spot that I could find is Breece Hall. And that might be surprising to some because both I and many before and many to come will trash the Jets. But I kind of like what the Jets are doing. They have Corey Davis. They have Elijah Moore. Now they went out and got Garrett Wilson. Now they have a clear lead back. And I'm sure they'll, you know, these days in the NFL, it's very rare you're getting the three-down workhorse. But Breece Hall is at least capable of that. And when you have a guy who can catch the ball out of the backfield, some of the clips that I've seen from his prospect profile and also just from watching him at Iowa State over the years, where he catches the ball and changes direction so fast, they're surrounding Zach Wilson with all these weapons. And I'm not going to say that the Jets are going to turn around and be a top 15 offense this year, but they're at least going all in. And if they do end up in the top 15, if you go back and cross-reference running back rankings with offensive rankings, whoever the lead back is in top 15 offenses is usually an RB1, like a top 12 in their position. This is just, again, back to the opportunity thing. So I think he's just, from day one, he has the clearest situation in terms of being able to walk into as many touches as possible. The guy I hated on day two, I hate it for him because I think he is arguably as good of a runner, if not maybe even a little bit better between the tackles, as Kenny Walker. Kenneth Walker, I like to call him Kenny, but he probably doesn't like that. Sorry, Kenny. But Seattle is a very crowded backfield space. I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to cut some guys. Like you mentioned in the text before, DJ Dallas is kind of like one of those special teams guys. He gets on punt return, so he probably takes up a roster spot. Pete Carroll has always had a love affair with Chris Carson. They still have that first-round draft capital. Now it's 3 or 4 years ago, tied up in Rashad Penny, but he had a good end of the season last year. So it's like they have all these guys, and Kenny Walker just seems like a two-down back to me. And if you put a two-down back in a system run by – or an offense that's going to be run by Drew Lock, the book's out on him, you know – I'm not high on the Seahawks, and it seems like just based on the way that their draft went this year, investing some of that early capital in offensive line and not in electric type skill position players outside of Kenny Walker, it seems like they're punting to get a quarterback next year, to me, in my humble opinion. So we may see Kenny Walker age a little bit better, kind of like this fine bold red that I'm drinking here. But I don't think this year it's going to be a very, very fruitful campaign for him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would have to say, certainly if it's specific to the day two picks, like you were saying about what the Jets are doing, it's interesting to see two guys who were they in the same draft class? Was it Zach Wilson and Tua, or were they 1 year different? They were 1 year different.
One year different.
Okay.
It felt the same because Tua basically didn't play at all his rookie year, or very minimally.
Yeah, and but seeing how the two teams, in a way, they're doing a similar thing in the sense of they're saying, all right, we're going to get you every weapon we feasibly can afford, and if you screw this up, we're just going to get somebody else. Like, we're going to ride it out, you know, if we need to draft somebody before your 5 years is up, or I guess not pick up your fifth-year option, that's perfectly fine. But then it's a smart way to do it because you end up being set up for success. So when you find that guy who is ready to step in and do it, it could be a veteran certainly if they needed to. Like what the Jets are doing. I mean, they initially had gotten Corey Davis. I know there was a splash signing after he showed up in Tennessee in that 1 year. But they did that. And then I feel like this is the first year where they're in a long time where they're really saying, all right, it's not that we got this guy named Chris Herndon. He's really good and he's really athletic. It's not that we got this washed out running back who he was good like a couple years ago in Pittsburgh, but like he can do something now. They're getting all these guys in this kind of in the same age bracket to say, we can build around these guys. I mean, I guess Corey Davis is probably the elder statesman at this point. But all the guys that they have, I mean, the Braxton Berrios, it's not a sexy signing, but I mean, a good slot guy. Like, there's a lot of these guys where it's like,
I like Berrios, yeah.
If you have that, if he is the depth piece in this offense, like that kind of explains how good this offense can be. Michael Carter, I don't think he did bad by any means, but I mean, his college production speaks for itself in terms of when he was paired with Javonte Williams. I'm not saying Javonte Williams and Breece Hall are the same guy, but it showed that Michael Carter can work in a committee and do well. I think if he has to bear the load, not just because he's a smaller guy, But if he has to bear the load by himself as a runner and as a receiver, even though the Jets didn't throw too much to the running back, it's going to be tough sledding. So I really like that one a lot. And one that I had to look this guy up because I didn't know who the hell he was. Tyrion Davis Price. I mean, it seems like a 49ers pick, but it seems like 2 to 3 rounds too soon in terms of getting a guy where it's like, we like our plug and play running backs. You know, this guy could very well end the season as our RB1 or our RB5. And we're perfectly okay with that. But it kind of seems like in a draft when everyone, the players kind of came to them, and I don't think they traded up for this pick necessarily, but it seems like one where they could have clearly picked him later and let him truly come to them. I don't really see how they felt like they needed to do that. And I don't know if it's necessarily a bad spot for him. I think given that no one was really talking about him at all pre-draft, from my understanding, it's great for him to get that kind of capital and that reassurance to say San Fran is going to use you in some capacity. But it's just tough to see that. And then to know that it's like, all right, well, everyone in the fantasy community is going to prefer the 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 guys that were drafted after you, highlighted by Damian Pierce, Zamir White, some of these guys. So who would you say is your least favorite player from day two in that any position? Just who is your least favorite guy? Whether it be landing spot, whether it be just your least favorite person that was picked, either way.
I hate him. Yeah. It's probably been said plenty of places, but I think it's just because it's very blatantly obvious. It does not make sense that the Giants took Wandale Robinson where they did. The guys with that size just don't project well on a just on a percentage hit rate basis to the NFL. Guy like last year, the Rams did the same thing with Tutu Atwell. I don't know if he ever saw the field. Everyone always drafts that little guy thinking, and he might this year, who knows? Everyone just always drafts that guy, and then ESPN puts the clip up, and then they're like, this guy's the next Tyreek Hill, or this guy's the next DeSean Jackson. Those guys are freaks. Like, we cannot bank on any of them. I've seen one Tyreek Hill in my life, and I've seen one DeSean Jackson. And even those two guys aren't all that similar. So I don't really know what the Giants were thinking with that one. It kind of touches on the Niners taking that running back from LSU. I won't even pretend to remember what his hyphenated name was. But it kind of reminds me of that in that, one, they didn't need him. Two, the position group that he's going into is already crowded. They have Galladay. They just re-signed Sterling Shepard. They have Kadarius Toney. Now word has come out that I guess he's disgruntled already for whatever reason. And I'm sure this isn't going to help because it kind of looks like this is sort of a clone of Kadarius Toney, who they spent a first round pick on last year. And they got crushed for that too, because it was earlier than he should have gone. So not to mention, you know, you're trying to bring Saquon Barkley back into the fold. It didn't make any sense to me at all. I think they should get, unless their plan is to trade Kadarius Toney, I think they should kind of get roasted into oblivion. And it seems like they are. I've seen a lot of people dragging them for that pick. So what do you think?
Yeah, very much the same. And it's funny to see, like we were just talking about the Jets, it's funny to see two teams that share a stadium do things entirely different. And I mean, it wasn't too long ago that we were watching the Giants do things very correctly with Eli Manning. And a lot of, I don't remember them in college necessarily, but relatively obscure prospects from what I remember, but based it on a great defense. And I mean, Eli just kind of running that offense, being the steady handed guy. And now it's the Jets doing the right thing, I think, and surrounding Zach Wilson with great talent. And maybe it's because the Giants have Daniel Jones. They didn't pick up his 5th year option. And they're also going ahead and just surrounding him with just obscure talent that, you know, Galladay, it seems like he literally just got paid from the line, like after a couple of years at the Lions of just being the guy that is the only one that could be qualified to catch a ball there. And he just got paid, went to the Giants. And I don't know what happened. I really don't. It looks like he's just pissed off all the time. I don't know what he'd be mad about. He's getting a boatload of money. But it's funny to think of like how the two different New York teams are doing it, where it seems like, yeah, getting Wandale Robinson, like they're drafting players that are positional players that Jones can throw to or the next quarterback. But looking at who was on the board, I don't know what the thought was. And yeah, with Kadarius Toney, regardless of whatever nonsense is going on behind the scenes, like, yeah, if that was a reach, if Wandale Robinson was a reach, like, and this is a new coaching staff too. So like, at what point are you going to let the coaching staff seemingly pick who they want or who they think is the best? I have to think that Daboll did not pick this guy or did not support this pick. Or if he did, he's just going to have to deal with it. But a guy that I was confused by, and I feel terribly bad for the quarterback, is Velus Jones, who going into his rookie year is 24 years old. And admittedly, I was a fan of Eskridge going to the Seahawks this last year. More so, I was a fan of him before he even went anywhere. It's more just a cool story. But when you get those older guys, one, don't draft him this soon, A. And B, the Bears have no one outside of Mooney and Komet, who Komet hasn't really become what they say he's going to anyway. But if he does, it's not like you're creating the Kelce Hill dynamic yet. Although, like you mentioned before, there being no Hill and no DeSean Jackson, I do remember when Mooney was coming out of college, he was specifically compared to DeSean Jackson. I don't necessarily agree with that really at all. But so just to add that tidbit in there. But adding Velus Jones, I mean, Pringle, who they picked him up from the Chiefs, I guess, for some reason, but he now has some legal problems and might be suspended for a little bit. I don't know who the hell else is there. I think they had a good slot guy a couple years back, but that's my guy who I was very confused by that. I don't understand why they went that direction. And again, if Fields was pissed off last year and looking dejected on the bench, just saying, I don't know what you want me to do. I don't understand how the game plan is going to work. They now have a defensive-minded head coach and gave him no more weapons. So arguably less because now A-Rob's gone. So I'm curious to see how that goes. But in terms of day three, I know this is the sleeper territory, or in this draft, not so much. But who are you dying to get from day three? Any position?
Zamir White to the Raiders. And I don't know if it was instinct or if I just saw it on the bottom line while I was falling asleep or something, but I swear I put that take out there before I knew that the Raiders weren't going to pick up Josh Jacobs' fifth-year option. Now that they've publicly announced that, Zamir White was, by my recollection, I loosely follow the national recruiting scene for college football. I closely follow the Virginia Tech recruiting scene. We were not in the sweepstakes for Zamir White. He was a little bit outside of our way, but I believe he was a top 10 running back. He's had multiple ACL tears, so that is of a concern. But I'm not. I typically am the type of person that I try to almost go against the grain. And when somebody is labeled as injury prone, a lot of times I don't necessarily believe that. I just think so. Guys can just be really unlucky. I mean, we see guys come back from ACL tears. It's when we were growing up, you know, when we were 10, 12, 15 years old, ACL tears were a huge deal, almost like career-ending type stuff. And now it's almost just like a broken bone where guys just rehab it, they come back, and they move on. So it's a shame it's happened to him twice, but you know, the Raiders are ideally, hopefully, trending up offensively, you know, with Devontae Adams there now. Still have Darren Waller. They've announced, you know, they're working on a long-term deal and they're not going to trade him. So one of the better tight ends in the league. So, again, trying to find a good running back, talented like Zamir White, that's going to be tied to a top 15 offense, I think that has that potential. I wanted to sneak in a quick honorable mention as well. My boy Khalil Shakir from Boise State, wide receiver going to the Buffalo Bills, is a fifth-round pick. So probably no guarantee that he actually makes the roster because they have a stupid amount of talent in the wide receiver room in Buffalo, especially after adding Jamison Crowder in the offseason as well. But Buffalo also is known to go five wide, so there may be some opportunity for him. And he not only is he the brother of my former trainer at our gym, so I have a severe bias towards him, but he meets one of my favorite prerequisites for drafting an NFL wide receiver, and that's guys that return punts and kicks in college because they know how to move with the ball in their hands in space, and he did that for Boise State. So I may take a late flyer on him. Who knows? He might just be somebody I star on the free agent wire and sort of keep towards the top of the queue. We'll see how our draft shakes out. But who's your day three guy?
One, it sounds like you may want to institute taxi squads this year for that sole reason. And I respect it. If you want to do it, go for it. You're the commissioner, you do whatever you want. But two guys that I'd mentioned Damian Pierce before, but just in the spirit of picking somebody different, who this was a guy who I liked a lot before the draft anyway, a converted linebacker. I was a running back in college, Tyler Allgeier. He's not an incredibly sexy runner as a running back necessarily, but I think that he does kind of everything incredibly well. And it certainly, once he went to the Falcons, regardless of draft capital, because I think he was a fifth rounder, going there, and this is before the news of Mike Davis being released, although with how he performed last year and what he's getting paid, it was no shock. But Cordarrelle Patterson, he's had such a bizarre career, and I know he's now being used as a running back, weapon, H-back, whatever you want to call it. But I think Allgeier can obviously be the much, much cheaper option of what they wanted from Mike Davis. And I think as they're kind of rounding out that offense, kind of doing a bit of a reboot with getting Matt Ryan out of town, you have Mariota there, you have Ridder waiting in the wings, I suppose. I'm not really a big fan of him, but
his mainland Mariota. That's what they're calling him.
And it's catchy. So I mean, maybe maybe he might be all right. But no, I think there's a lot of up in the air, I think, with that offense. And they obviously spent the eighth pick to get London. They already have Pitts there. Limited Zacchaeus. As I was looking through our free agents, by the way, for the rookie draft, I saw that I didn't have him starred as someone I was kind of like looking at to consider amongst our rookies that were drafting. But I almost started him, and I was like, I have a bit of deja vu beginning of last season. I think we were actually recording an episode, and we talked about Zacchaeus, and I'm like, I can't do this again and think Zacchaeus is going to be somebody, because it's not going to happen. I have a recording thinking it's going to happen, and it didn't happen in a year, so I can't do it again. But that offense, I would be excited to see Allgeier be a part of it. Again, being a fifth-round guy, he's a cheap option for them. I don't know why they don't give him at least a shot, and he's probably one of those ones where I'll be excited to watch him in the preseason. He'll do pretty well, kind of like a Jarrett Patterson did for me last year, and then he's just been sitting on my bench in obscurity, and he's now buried behind Brian Robinson and Antonio Gibson and J.D. McKissick, but it is what it is. I'm not worried about it. Who would, just to round it out here, who would you say you think is the most likely to be overdrafted? And obviously we know it's our league, but it could maybe be just more broadly speaking, like who do you think is just the consensus seems to be wrong on in your eyes? And this could very possibly be the person you have no interest in. So who would be those two? Who's either most likely to be overdrafted and someone who you have no interest in getting?
I think overdrafted, I wrote down Sky Moore. I don't think he's necessarily going to be overdrafted in every league. I have a hot take that I think he might be supremely overdrafted in our league because at number five, Big Mike, a.k.a. Drama Beats, lost Tyreek Hill, Pat Mahomes stack this offseason. I know he's probably going to miss that because, I mean, that's been incredibly, incredibly fruitful for him. Mm-hmm. And so he might reach a little bit thinking that Sky Moore is going to be the Tyreek Hill replacement. I personally am of the mindset that every time Tyreek Hill wasn't available, they immediately put Mecole Hardman straight into that role. And it sort of feels like people are forgetting about Mecole Hardman. You could also make the argument that they wouldn't have drafted Sky Moore if they believed that much in Mecole Hardman. But they also lost Pringle, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. I don't think they brought DeMarcus Robinson back. I can't remember by looking. Mm-hmm. So they're doing a little bit of roster churn here. And they also obviously have Juju Smith-Schuster, Marcus Valdes-Scantling. They still have Travis Kelce. So it's not like Sky Moore is walking into this situation where he's automatically going to even get on the field, let alone get targeted a bunch. And so I've seen him, you know, in the way too early ADPs for rookie drafts and stuff, that he's easily going in the top 12, often top 10. I'm not saying that at the end of the day he won't be worth it, but I don't think it's as much of a slam dunk as people were in general leading us to believe. But I wrote down that for the player I have no interest in, I sort of just put everybody overall. And I don't mean that as let's say in hindsight, if I were to have held on to the 101, I would have probably, about 99% sure, I would have taken either Breece Hall or Drake London. But that's why I traded out of the 101 and the 108, because I'm not really a big fan of – I wasn't a big fan a lot of the of a lot of the talent coming in, and I definitely wasn't a fan of where a lot of it landed. You know, I was a big fan of Jameson Williams. Don't really love the situation he's falling into in Detroit. I wasn't a big fan of Drake London, but he's got the clearest path to targets and success fantasy wise year one. So I'm a little bit more excited to just take some flyers later in the draft on some of these guys that maybe don't have the draft capital behind them, but landed in some better situations and might still have some pretty good path to success.
Completely agree with the Sky Moore selection there. It was between Christian Watson, at least, was a guy that I wasn't too high on. I understood that he kind of had that archetype where it was just like, there's a couple of guys like this in every single draft, and it's rare that they hit in what their value is. Usually it's someone that just completely gets, you know, googly eyed on just the physicality of a player that's that big, that fast, that raw athleticism. But I think going to the Packers, I understand that, I mean, Rodgers has damn near no one else to throw to. And that's even funnier to think of. It could have also been MVS and Equanimee St. Brown, but it's not even them. So I know you're probably already frustrated at the drops that he had with those guys. So curious to see how the whole Christian Watson thing shakes out. But yeah, with Sky Moore specifically, I know there's a lot of people that were, it seemed pretty split on him even before the draft, but then certainly the people that were in on him when he went to go catch passes from Patrick Mahomes. I understand why you would get excited about that. But one, it doesn't always have to be a one-for-one in saying, well, Tyreek Hill left, they drafted Sky Moore. That doesn't make him Tyreek Hill. Like, in no way is that the thought, in the same way that Christian Watson is not Davante Adams. It doesn't have to be necessarily a one-for-one. But I think Sky Moore could certainly, like you were saying, that's a very good point of in our league, he could be overdrafted even beyond what I think most people would think is overdrafted. And then the guy that I see what you're saying with the no interest. It's one of those things where it's funny that I'm glad I traded out of the 101. I know in our Christian McCaffrey trade, and this was, again, before the draft, so it was before any of these landing spots happened, and I could never imagine that a lot of these would have happened this way. But to have done that, I was glad to have done it, certainly looking back on it now. But then I'm incredibly glad that you were able to, like, post-draft, be able to move that in the way that you did and to get really two pieces, not just CeeDee Lamb, that are valuable to you going forward. So again, they could hit. Breece Hall could be a stud. London, he's my favorite in the draft in terms of wide receivers. So I think he's going to do well there just in terms of volume. But yeah, no interest in basically almost anyone that you could argue any of these guys can be under or overdrafted, because it's really just a crapshoot in terms of, do you just blindly draft talent and ignore the fact that everyone went to terrible spots somehow? Or you actually try to pick people that went to good landing spots, even if they were drafted in like the fourth and fifth round. It's a very bizarre scenario, and I hope the best for us. I mean, Godspeed to all of us trying to do rookie drafts. I know we, of course, have ours here in, I guess, a week from today. So,
yeah, we'll probably be five picks into it by this time.
Yeah, someone will have just gone completely dark and not understood that a slow draft means you can actually just go as slow as you want.
Yeah.
But it'll be an emergency, and it'll make sense. We'll berate them for it. It'll be fine.
Hopefully nobody has to take their cat to the vet this year.
Yeah, it may be a different pet this year, but someone's going to the vet, that's for sure. Well, very excited to do our rookie draft here in a week. I'm sure there's going to be even more hubbub and coach speak to come out to make us lose our minds even more. But as the guest, you get the last word. Do you have anything that you want to impart to the Dynasty Daddies out there? Any inspirational quote? Anything you want to leave us with?
I actually wanted to attack somebody if I could, to let out that last bit of anger. Just to let out that last bit of anger that, you know, has been stewing all week with this AJ Brown trade. I don't necessarily blame John Robinson. I kind of do, but I really want to say, Trent Baalke, you can walk. I don't know if Trent Baalke's fat, but he should walk his fat ass into oncoming traffic, because I think that he's the reason he messed up this whole wide receiver market when he gave Christian Kirk $37 million. Shout out to the Browns for getting their Amari Cooper thing done first before all this mess blew up, because as soon as they did that with Kirk, then every other wide receiver in the league was like, give me crazy amounts of money, because Christian freaking Kirk just got $37 million in Jacksonville guaranteed. So the AJ Brown fallout, the Tyreek Hill fallout, and it's going to just continue on. So Trent Baalke, eat a dick.
Arguably, either of the things that you just said about Trent Baalke are the best snippets on this podcast that have happened in the, it's now 43 episodes. That was fantastic. And also, I completely agree. So I hope it happens, either of those things that you just said. And Tyler, I appreciate you, brother.
Always good to be on. Can't wait till next time.